From WGCU News, this is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. Remember the solar amendment that 73% of voters approved last August? It would extend property tax breaks for businesses installing solar energy systems. But that amendment is working its way through the Florida legislature, and it's taking two very different forms. The Senate version and the House version differ in length by 13 pages. And the House bill is adding numerous requirements for companies and homeowners financing or leasing solar panels. That has some solar advocates concerned, while others applaud the addition of consumer protections. We'll talk with the authors of the two bills, turning the amendment into law, and with people working in the solar industry about what it means for their business and their customers. Plus, the Sanibel Poetry Fest is Monday, and we'll talk with organizers and local poets from Charlotte County to Sanibel about the power of poems in a world where words can feel at once omnipotent and disposable. First, the news. This is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. They've been bringing the joys of poetry to Sanibel Island for going on 17 years. On Monday, the annual Sanibel Poetry Fest is once again bringing poets and writers from across our region together to share their work. Later on in our show, we'll talk with poets sharing their work at the event, and we'll hear some poems about our region from local poets. But first, more than 70% of Florida voters said yes to an amendment last August that would extend property tax exemptions to commercial properties if they installed solar panels, basically telling businesses that if they added solar panel equipment to their property, its value would not be factored into the property taxes that they already pay. Voters might assume that amendment goes, as voted upon, into law, but that's not the case. The Florida Senate and House each write their own version of it as a bill to be agreed upon and then passed into law. This particular amendment has gained some weight on its trip through the House, though, with several pages of requirements for sellers of solar equipment. Solar energy lobbyist Susan Glickman with Southern Alliance for Clean Energy joins us from Tallahassee to talk about what these regulations are all about and why she opposes their addition to the bill in the House. Thanks for joining us, Susan.
You bet, Julie. Thank you for having me.
Also joining us from Palm Beach is Justin Hoysrat with Vinyasun, a solar energy company and also a member of the Florida Solar Energy Industries Association. He can give us some perspective from the seller or contractor's point of view. Thanks for calling in.
Thanks for having me, Julie.
Also, we'll talk with the author of the Lean Senate bill, Senator Jeff Brandes, about his take on the amendment, and we'll talk with the author of the House version, which includes the added regulations, which he says are consumer protections. That is Ray Rodriguez. We are talking about the bumpy road Amendment 4 is taking on its way to becoming law. What are your thoughts? Give us a call at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we are at WGCU Public Media, and on Twitter, we're at WGCU, using the hashtag GCL. Because they are in legislative session, I pre-recorded interviews with both Senator Brandes and Representative Rodriguez to get their angle on this amendment and the bills they both authored. But first, here is Senator Jeff Brandes describing what the bill he drafted in the Senate says.
It's already exempted on residential homes. If you put a solar panel on your residential home, it doesn't count towards your property tax. That's current law today. We're simply extending that to all solar installations, no matter the property type, no matter the size of the installation. So whether it's 10 panels on your neighbor's home or it's 2,000 panels on a 200-acre installation, neither one of them would pay property tax for the added value of those solar panels on that property.
So, Susan Glickman, does this sound familiar to you as the wording of the amendment that Floridians passed in August?
Yes, absolutely. It's a very straightforward notion, and as Senator Brandes said, residential solar has already been exempted from taxes. We're just going to expand that to commercial, and it also abates the tangible personal property tax on the solar equipment. You know, frankly, what people did in the state of Florida in 2006 when they dramatically passed Amendment 4 and also the defeat of the very deceptive utility-backed initiative Amendment 1 is they said they want to remove barriers to solar. Florida has an enormous solar resource, and we're not utilizing that. In a state with nearly 9 million electricity customers, we only have 11,626 net metered system, and those are figures that have been reported to the Public Service Commission. So we have not adopted a solar as we should have, and it's a tremendous way for people to save money and to lock in their fuel, you know, prices, because because there are no fuel prices with solar, and the sun provides us that. So once you've paid off those solar panels, it's a tremendous investment. So the public is ready for it, and they spoke loud and clear. So Senator Brandis filed Senate Bill 90 back in December, and the night before the legislative session started at about 5:03 p.m., we see this House Bill 1351. And I'll just mention just three things really quickly that seem to be troubling, is that it gives increasing broad powers to both the Florida Public Service Commission and the utilities themselves. And we've seen the utilities do what they can to stand in the way of solar being deployed.
Susan, I'm going to get into all of that in a minute, but first I just want to go over real quickly the House version. It is different, as it adds stipulations for companies that are leasing or financing solar installations to homeowners. And that bill was written by Representative Ray Rodriguez. It's pretty long, so I won't read the whole bill, but essentially it lists a number of disclosures that solar companies would be required to make to customers. Most of them are customer protection caveats, like a person can back out of a sale before the installation begins and things like that. Full terms of payment have to be explicitly written and things of that nature. And here now is Representative Rodriguez, who's explaining what inspired him to add these requirements to his version of the bill.
And I did that because I wanted to learn from mistakes that had been made in other states and protect hardworking Florida taxpayers from those mistakes. And what we saw was that in states out west, once the solar industry really took off in states like Nevada, California, and Arizona, bad actors would come in and basically utilize questionable business practices, and they do it under the guise of solar. So what was happening in those states were, one, consumers were being taken advantage of, but two, it was giving the solar industry a black eye because those were the news headlines. So my viewpoint was, why make those mistakes when we can learn from mistakes that others have made and prevent them from occurring before our solar industry takes off? Essentially, it's truth in lending, but specific to solar.
So, and I can see where it's a big ticket item. It's not something that, you know, you just go pick up at the store. It takes an installation and all of that. Is there a reason that there needs to be specific protections like this for consumers regarding solar, or do existing consumer protection laws not apply?
I believe we needed specific statutes for solar. In our bill, we spell out that you have to provide the part number of the component. Now, that, you know, would not be in any of our existing statutes. And you may say, well, why should you require that the part number of the components of the solar, the renewable energy device, be provided to the consumer? Well, what the consumers in Arizona were experiencing is they would have a product break. They would have their system go down, and they couldn't get it repaired because they couldn't find out what the part number was. And the person who had leased them the equipment was long gone and had no incentive to go back because they already had them on the hook to receive the payments. If you warranty your product, you don't have to provide the part numbers. And so we give them a way to take away the portions of the bill that they think may be burdensome by providing a warranty. But if you're not going to provide a warranty, then you need to tell people what are the components that they're signing up for the next 20 years.
So Justin Hoysrad with VinyaSun and a member of the Florida Solar Energy Industries Association, what do you think of these consumer protections that have been added on the House version?
You know, just going back a little bit in terms of where Florida is in the state, and Susan highlighted a little bit, we have been very slow to pick up our industry. And what Representative Rodriguez, House Leader Rodriguez, is offering is starting a conversation in the efforts of hoping that solar will grow. So when it comes to consumer protection, obviously the industry wants to be involved in that conversation. And I think that is what the House version and those who are working on the House version is offering, some conversational points that we can now work through as this bill moves through each committee. Writing legislation and enacting law is hard. It is not supposed to be easy, and it is supposed to be a conversation, and all of the stakeholders involved should be involved in that conversation. And I think that is what the House bill is beginning to do. You know, the people in Florida have voted, 1.9 million voters approve this bipartisan constitutional amendment, and it's time to enact this legislation so that Florida is not taking additional money out of the taxpayers' pocket so they can choose clean energy. But we have to do it in a safe and easy manner that makes it affordable for people and that bad actors aren't going to ruin it for the rest of us, just like Representative Rodriguez had mentioned.
But what I don't understand is, I mean, aren't consumers kind of protected already by laws that are in place in the state of Florida? I mean, I just don't know. This bill kind of gets really specific, too. I mean, there are some where it says that the solar installer has to predict the future energy bills 20 years into the future. I mean, it gets pretty specific in this particular bill.
And I'm not saying that I agree with the amount of exposure that is created in terms of the lines that are in the bill, but as it moves through committee hearings and it moves through drafts, it's something that as an industry we need to follow and ensure the will of the Floridian people and taxpayers is met in a way that doesn't create additional barriers, obviously, for people going solar. This is a process. That's why it's legislative. And there are additional consumer protections already in place in Florida. But just like if you were to go to lease a car or even lease an apartment, there are disclosures that need to be created, and that's continued to occur over time as different financing models come out for each of those types of purchases. So with solar, it's likely not going to be any different if we expect the solar industry and leasing and purchasing solar systems to be around for a long time. It's a process that we're going to need to define, and consumers are going to need to be protected. But we have to do it smart, and we have to do it in a way that doesn't erect additional barriers to slowing the solar industry, that's for sure.
So, Susan Glickman with the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy, how do you feel? I mean, you've said that you're opposed to these additions to this bill. How do you think that these types of, and they're called consumer protections, others are calling them disclosures, how do you think that that will block consumers from, or disincline consumers from bringing solar onto their house?
Julie, the Southern Alliance Clean Energy supports consumer protection. The point is we oppose needless and unrealistic regulation that add a burden. It creates another barrier to solar, because respecting what the voter said is, let's remove these barriers. Every aspect of a solar transaction is already governed by Florida or federal law. If there is some fix, like the serial number on a part or whatever, there's not a problem with that. In fact, most of the disclosures that Representative Rodriguez is proposing are already in law, so they may be even duplicative. We have Florida has a deceptive and unfair trade practices. You know, we have the Department of Business and Professional Regulation, the Division of Consumer Services, and so much of this is already protected. What is really more troubling is giving sort of increased powers to the utilities themselves and to the Florida Public Service Commission. So we want strong consumer protections, but needless and unrealistic regulations, as you mentioned, where you're supposed to project what utility rates are going to be 20 years down the road, and even someone's energy use. I mean, some people have the air conditioner on and their sliding glass door open. I mean, you can't regulate those sorts of things. So we would like to see, a clean bill, a fair bill. But when you have something that is now going to, say, as sellers have to comply with, new standards set by the electric utility in whose service territory the distributed energy system will be installed, that can be troubling. The main thing, and I agree 100% with Justin, is let's, remove this barrier. Let's reduce the cost of solar for people, and let's move this through the process. So the bill does have to be, the amendment does have to be implemented in the form of a bill. The Florida legislature put this on unanimously. unanimously, and it passes with 73% of the vote, and we need to do that. And we appreciate, you know, both Representative Rodriguez and Senator Brandis's leadership on this, but let's make sure there's not, you know, something in here that's going to then down the road make it harder for people to get solar. So we want strong consumer protections, and we have those.
And then we're,
people have to be certified contractors, electrical contractors, to install these solar systems. So they are heavily regulated already. So let's just make this happen.
And look at all the wording very closely. We are talking about the path of a voter-approved amendment as it is formed into a law, in particular the Solar Amendment Number 4. We're talking with Susan Glickman, a solar lobbyist, Justin Hoysrad, who is a Solar Energy Industry Association member, and we're hearing from the House and Senate authors of two very different versions of the bill. You can be part of this conversation, too, by giving us a call at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK on Facebook. We're at WGCU Public Media. And on Twitter, we are at WGCU using the hashtag GCO. Now I'm going to kind of step deep into the weeds here. One part of the bill that stood out is a section which says, and I'm going to quote this little part, a seller who installs a distributed energy generation system must comply with applicable safety, performance, and reliability standards established by A, the Florida Public Service Commission, and B, the electric utility in whose service territory the distributed energy generation system will be installed. Then it lists, you know, federal electric regulations, et cetera. So, Susan, I wanted to ask you, what is the Florida Public Service Commission?
Yes, so that is an agency that regulates the monopoly investor and utilities in the state of Florida. They also have powers over water utilities and telecommunications, although much less around telecommunications as that industry has changed. But they regulate the utilities.
So this part of this bill would say then that the people who regulate the big utility companies would then also be able to set the reliability, performance, and safety standards over small home installations.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And the line after that, which is equally troubling, is it said that sellers who install distributed energy systems have to comply with standards set by the utilities themselves. So there's a long history, and I've been involved in energy policy issues both at the legislature and at the Public Service Commission for quite a long time. And historically, the Florida Public Service Commission, which is supposed to balance the needs of the public and consumers with the regulated utilities. So they have a franchise agreement, and they have to serve, and they have to give, you know, reliability, and they have a regulatory constraints that they operate under. But the public also, you know, their needs need to be balanced, and traditionally we've not seen that. You know, we get involved in conservation goal setting and needs determination for new power plants and rate increases. So they do a lot of things, and traditionally they have sided heavily with the utilities. And so the idea that they're now going to have broad new powers to put constraints, and we can see what happens in other states where the utilities have tried to put fees on solar customers in an effort to, you know, just make it more difficult. You know, it's obvious when you're an investor in utility, you get a guaranteed range of a rate of return on your capital expenditures. So they want to build power plants. And at some level, you know, solar, and I mentioned the telecommunications industry, which went through such change, solar threatens this traditional business model because people are going to essentially put little power plants on their own homes. So what we see is utilities around the country trying to smack fees on people who have solar or make it difficult for them to interconnect. There's a number of places they can do that, and so that is a very big concern that this is going to give sort of increasing broad discretion to both the Public Service Commission and to the utilities themselves, who by their nature aren't looking, you know, for people to compete with them in the market. So I think that language is very troubling as well.
Well, and I asked Representative Rodriguez why private homeowners' solar installations would fall under this organization's jurisdiction, and here's what he had to say.
The Florida Public Service Commission is who sets the safety standards for the utilities. So what we're saying is solar panels will have to be safe, essentially. they're the definitive expert when it comes to utility safety. If you're talking about anything that generates power in the state of Florida, the Florida Public Service Commission is the regulatory body that sets the safety standards.
So, Justin Hoysrad, I wanted to ask you, does it concern you that a bill puts private solar under the safety, performance, and reliability standards of not only the Florida Public Service Commission, but also the local electrical companies?
Well, what's mostly concerning is the level that we have to go to have the conversation. And I think, you know, the House bill puts this first and foremost in a position where we can actually begin talking about where regulation should exist and where it shouldn't exist. Florida is already, you know, pretty well regulated in its utility districts, and the fees that Susan was talking about do come up now and again in a variety of different utility rate cases. And it's good to point out that in every single utility rate case where a regulated monopoly investor-owned utility brought those additional fees or fixed charges to their public service commission, they have all been flat out rejected. So it's important to know that. And what we're really looking forward to is having conversations with our state representatives about where these regulations exist and what safety mechanisms are already in place.
What is already in place? Like right now, who oversees the safety of installation with solar?
Currently, you know, Florida Building Code is one of the locations where a lot of regulation is put into place in building. This is obviously a home improvement or a building improvement. So you have local Florida zoning, the Florida Building Code. You additionally have the National Electric Code, which would certify installations and equipment. You have Underwriters Laboratory, which certifies the installation and equipment. You have a variety of different regulatory bodies. Now, the utilities themselves, they also have written rules when it comes to interconnection and interconnecting the solar systems to the grid and the requirements associated with the equipment that's being installed. And that's something that goes through the process of the Florida Public Service Commission. Whereas in many cases, the local municipalities have their own process. So it's important to know that the installations are always typically done in a safe and fair manner for Florida homeowners and Florida building owners because of these additional regulations and safety precautions already put in place. Now, I can't speak to what the House bill is talking about, but it does seem to have the intent of saying we'd like to make sure that the equipment is safe and reasonable and doesn't affect the public in any way. So during the drafting and once it gets past the number of committees, we hope to wind up with a bill that emphasizes that there are already places that the Public Service Commission can potentially look to write their rules when it comes to interconnecting with the utility. And it's not something that we have to make up and draft ourselves in Florida because these protections already exist. We just have to make sure that individuals and the contractors who are installing these systems are actually following the rules. So giving our public utilities guidance on where they should be looking is certainly a reasonable thing to ask for.
Well, and in the wording of the bill itself, there might it's a little open-ended as it stands right now. So what you're saying is maybe kind of close up some possible loopholes for interpretation?
Absolutely. This is not a law yet. This is a draft bill that is working its way through committees. It's an opportunity for us in the industry, an opportunity for advocates like the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy, and also an opportunity for the public to speak up and reach out to the members of the House who are going to see this bill in committee, even reach out to Representative Rodriguez in whatever way they feel comfortable and discuss what options they think make sense in terms of protecting their safety. The solar industry itself has done many things over the last number of years to establish safe, reasonable contracts for good, you know, solar companies to use. The Solar Energy Industry Association, the national version of that, has released draft approved contracts that have been vetted by banking institutions. They've been vetted by lawyers. And individuals who are selling these products should be using those contracts because they do have disclosures that specifically open up a little bit more information to specifically homeowners who are making the decision whether or not to buy or lease solar panels. I would not expect a consumer to walk into an auto dealership and sign a one-page piece of paper for a $35,000 or $40,000 car and not know what it came with, not know the features, not know the miles per gallon, and certainly not know the warranties that it came with. I would not expect that. And in the solar industry, you know, we do have a little bit more leniency when it comes to our home improvement contracts. And that goes for all of the industries, not just solar. That means windows, doors, you know, garage doors, roofing, siding, even purchasing sprinkler equipment. It is not a heavily regulated industry when it comes to home improvements, but there are protections that are offered. And it is really up to the industry at this point to continue to make sure that this consumer is protected and to educate our representatives on what those protections already exist in current law and national standards.
So, Susan, you were trying to say something there?
Yeah, Julie, what solar installers, solar contractors are regulated under the Department of Business and Professional Regulation. That's part of the executive branch. So that's very important, and that's swimming pool contractors, roofers, plumbing. So, you know, they are regulated, and part of the way that the representative's bill is drafted is copies of sort of the structure from Arizona, and he introduces this concept of seller. And in Arizona, it's in the office of the attorney general. So contractors, you know, such as these solar contractors, electricians, you know, really are regulated in that way. So I just think, you know, if there's a, you know, sort of a loophole or something that needs to be filled, let's do that. But to give broad discretion to the Florida Public Service Commission and to the utilities themselves who have a history, remember they funded to the tune of more than $30 million a deceptive campaign in November that, again, would have set the stage and put into the Constitution a presumption that would just set the stage to create more barriers. So we understand their motivation, but we really need to move this along and allow people in Florida to save money right there in your community. J.J. Taylor, the Chorus distributor, just put solar up on their roof. In my community, the Great Bay distributor, the Anheuser-Busch distributor, put a megawatt and a half of solar on their roof, and it's a six-year payback. They're going to save $6 million. So, you know, there is a, you know, an inherent conflict between businesses and families that want to put solar and utilities that want to build power plants and sell the energy. So, you know, we would be naive not to understand that there are certain forces at play.
Yeah, and
so
I talked with talked with Senator Brandis about the position of the power companies as solar is marching forward, and here's what he had to say about that.
The monopolistic power companies are, you know, historically have a very strong lobby in the state. I think that they're conflicted on this because many of them are actually utilizing, they actually want the ad valorem exemption. But I think for the most part, most power companies have been hands-off. I think there are a couple that have been engaged. I don't know about their exact level of engagement. I haven't spoken to them directly about this issue in a couple of months.
And since I interviewed Senator Brandis, he's been quoted in two newspapers saying, and I'm going to quote here, the Florida Power and Light lobbyists have told him, Brandis, that they spoke to Representative Rodriguez about adding the language to the implementing bill. Susan, you've been working in the Capitol for more than 30 years. Does it surprise you that the Florida Power and Light lobbyist would come out and say, yeah, we talked to him about putting this into that bill?
Well, it doesn't surprise me that they would be engaged in trying to get, you know, a bill in a way that is favorable to them. You know, I don't know so much about them admitting that or not, but, you know, I spent 2.5 hours yesterday on a bill where they're trying to overturn a Supreme Court decision to put an Oklahoma fracking company in people's rate base. So they have, as Senator Brand has said, historically been very influential, and they mostly get their way at the legislature and in the Florida Public Service Commission. And that's why it's really time to empower families and business owners in the state of Florida to take advantage. And I'll say it again, out of 9 million electricity customers, we have 11,626 systems. It's less than 0.1% of solar. And it's really a crime that they've done everything to set up barriers. So I very much appreciate Representative Rodriguez and Senator Brand's leadership on this. I concur with Justin's point about a conversation, but it's more than a conversation. You know, we've got a clean implementation of Amendment 4 and Senate Bill 90, and, you know, we all support consumer protections, and I would argue that by and large we have those in place, and if there's some tweak that needs to be fixed, but to expect solar installers to advise people on the tax credit at the federal level for people, I mean, it's almost like requiring a solar installer to be, a banker or a tax advisor. So you cannot put, needless and unrealistic, burdensome regulations and think that you're honoring the will of the people, which is to reduce barriers to solar. So we need this, we have protections. They have the Department of Business and Professional Regulation and all sorts of other agencies. But traditionally, the Florida Solar Energy Industries Association, which is part of the University of Central Florida, has actually approved the panels. And I was intrigued by what Representative Rodriguez said, because I can tell you that the Florida Public Service Commission is not in any position to look at the safety of particular panels. That is not something you can talk about the safety of the grid system and interconnecting, but there are other entities that certify. So I didn't quite follow his logic in what he said there. But anyway, we hope that this bill passes, and I do think that people should contact their lawmakers and let them know how they feel. And I hope that they will indeed honor the will of the voters.
So, Justin, I wanted to ask you real quick before we wrap up, where do you see this bill going? Do you see some of these regulations being like trimmed off of it as it goes forward?
Well, I think one of the big things that we have to really understand, and the fact that sometimes we look at our representatives in the House and both the Senate as some kind of superheroes that should know everything about every industry all the time. And unfortunately, that's just not the case. It's up to us as an industry, and it's up to us as the people of Florida to educate them on what makes sense and what doesn't make sense. And it's up to the lawmakers to write laws that essentially implement that will and also protect people and the best interests of the public. So when it comes down to, the House and their committees trying to figure out what makes the most sense, they are obviously getting information. And it depends on where they get their information from, what winds up in these first and second and third drafts of these bills. And it's clear, based on what you had just mentioned, Julie, that some of the information is coming from places that we wouldn't exactly like to see that information come from, specifically from a potential lobbyist source who may want to hurt the solar industry. At the end of the day, what we're trying to do is establish a law that was voted for by more than 70% of the people of Florida. 1.9 million voters, a little bit more than that, approve this measure to tell the government to keep their hands out of their pocket when it comes to property taxes and to implement this bill.
So, and then
how it gets there is a whole different story.
And that's the thing. That's what kind of amazes me. This is an amendment. It was passed by people. And now is there a possibility, Susan, with your experience in Tallahassee, is it possible that this could get killed?
It could. I would say that's not probable. But I can tell you that when we passed the abatement for residential property, real property taxes, that was in 2008, and it wasn't implemented to 2013. Mm. So it doesn't have to be. I mean, it needs to be implemented, but they aren't under some constraint where it has to go into law this year in particular. So we would hope not, because every year, Florida, citizens basically lose money, and they lose their ability to have a low-cost way of providing energy without fuel charges.
Okay.
Just yesterday, I listened to Florida Power and Light talk about how they send $3.2 billion a year out of state to buy gas.
Yeah.
Because we don't have anything in the state. We don't have coal. We don't have uranium. We don't have gas here in the state.
Well, we got plenty of sunshine. But
here at home, it helps our economy.
We have to leave it there for now because we have run out of time, but I want to thank both of our guests. Coming up, poet Robert Frost said poetry is when an emotion has found its thought and the thought has found words. We're talking to Southwest Florida poets, finding the emotions and words that fit Southwest Florida. They'll be sharing their work at the Sanibel Poetry Fest this coming Monday, and we'll talk with the poets just ahead.